Zoe, is TikTok bad?
I think it can be bad, but it really depends on the user. Like, we gotta be smarter.
It saves people's lives. It put women more in the center of the medical discussion.
I don't want to accept that I have ADHD because of all these like cringy reels that I see online. It's like, I don't want to be a part of this.
What does it feel like? What is that tornado that you have 24/7 inside of you? What does it feel like? How do you feel on the inside? And those should be our criteria. You are the expert for your body.
Naturally, as humans, as the internet naturally is, we always take it too far.
What we need in the end is international, up-to-date, evidence-based knowledge that's accessible. Mm-hmm. And that's free, and a world where when you get a diagnosis, you actually get support rather than discrimination.
Eight signs you have ADHD.
Is self-diagnosis valid, dangerous, bullshit, better than an official diagnosis? Mental health content is problematic.
I agree.
Question mark. It's also problematic, but so was my doctor's appointment when I was a teenager. So. A question that was asked by a follower on Instagram, if we could discuss the topic of the self-diagnosis wave, I guess, of neurodivergencies, mm-hmm. of ADHD, so much going on the internet, and there's a mm-hmm. ton of fucking sketchy stuff out there.
Yeah, I've seen some really sketchy things.
I watched videos, I tried to research it, I have my own thoughts and my own experience. Mm-hmm. Let's start by looking at the poll I posted a couple weeks ago, where I asked mm-hmm. the social media diagnosis wave is, and the options were super dangerous and bad. Second, it depends, but more negative. It depends, mm-hmm. but I think it's mostly positive. And I think it's pretty awesome. What do you think most people voted for?
It depends.
Yeah, the one in the middle for sure. But it depends more negative or it depends more positive?
It depends more negative.
I was actually surprised. It was 60% that clicked on it depends, but more negative. And even though I'm aware of like the problems, I think I was so biased by my own personal experience and probably my professional background that I didn't think it was so dangerous because I felt like people can just, I don't know, see a video and know if it's good for them or not. And if not, they just move on and they're educated and they understand it.
Well, not everybody has critical thinking.
Exactly. And not everybody has clinical experience. So
that too. Yeah. Especially like teenagers or kids that are watching stuff like that.
Yeah.
They'll be very easily influenced. Yeah. I mean, of course, there are like good points. And I think a lot of the good points are like awareness and inclusivity. People get more, how do I say, they can accommodate better to people with neurodivergency because they understand now instead of being like completely clueless. So I think there's a lot of positives to it. But then naturally, as humans, as the internet naturally is, we always take it too far. mm-hmm. And then mm-hmm. it gets really twisted and, you know.
Maybe we can start by looking at self-diagnosis as a thing without like the internet, just self-diagnosis mm-hmm. as a phenomenon mm-hmm. that was
great
out there way before mm-hmm. mental health advice on Instagram, because just Googling your symptoms and coming to the mm-hmm. conclusion of a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Is self-diagnosis valid, dangerous, bullshit, better than an official diagnosis?
I think it depends on what you're diagnosing. Like if you're diagnosing mm-hmm. a cold, then it's not that dangerous. Mm-hmm. But I remember when I was younger and I would like Google some of my symptoms and always ends up to like death or something. Like I'm just like, and then it would completely freak me out and then gives me a ton of anxiety, you know, thinking yeah. that, oh crap, am I gonna die? Like, is this cancer? Is this?
Yeah, it was always either being pregnant or having cancer.
That, yes, And I was just like, am I pregnant? I'm like, I don't think so. It can't be. Like, so they always like exaggerate things just to make you go to the doctor. I don't know. I feel like that's what they're doing. Not exaggerate, but like they can't rule that out. So it's always in there.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped doing that. And whenever I am like sick or something, I would just go to a doctor. They know best.
Hopefully they do. Not always. But yeah, you're so right. All those forums where you can find like stories about someone else having similar symptoms and then you just read the story and that, what mm-hmm. they ended up with, it's just so anxiety inducing and also not mm-hmm. realistic, because of course only the horror stories would end up written out as a text on a forum.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yes.
Why would someone go like, oh, I have weird symptoms. I went to the doctor and it's all good.
Like, turns out it's nothing.
Or just something really simple. Like, why would you do the effort to go back online and post about your nothingness diagnosis? Of course, the horrible stuff ends up in those forums.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
Yeah, so it's not really the right prevalence, I guess. Okay, but when it comes to self-diagnosing, like mental health problems
mm-hmm.
or neurodivergencies, well, what's your thought when someone tells you, I'm autistic, but I haven't been to the doctor, I don't have a formal diagnosis?
Oh, interesting. I don't know. I think if someone tells me that, then I'll start observing them to see if what they say is correct or if it makes sense. I don't know. You can kind of feel it off the person as well. I don't know how to explain it, but you can tell if the person actually did their research. You know what I mean? Like, that's the person look like he saw a couple of videos and he's like, yeah, I have that. Or this person actually like did a bunch of research and really looked into it. The only step left is actually getting an official diagnosis. Like, I'll probably talk to them a bit more about it. I'm like, oh, what makes you think you have that? Like, or what is it? Like, if you could explain to me what are the symptoms of the autism that you think you have or stuff like that. And I mean, I wouldn't really judge them because like, who am I to judge them? But I'll just be like curious of like how they got to that point. And then if it just doesn't sound correct, it depends on who the person is. I might not say anything. I'll just be like, okay, well, it's your life. Who am I to tell you otherwise? But I do feel like sometimes people really love their labels and it's not really good if they're just jumping for the label. But then again, who am I to?
I'm not trying to find out what your like conversation with that person would be. More like, what's your impulse mm-hmm. when you hear it? Are you like suspicious? Are you like, oh, same? Or indifferent? And I think, like you said, it's just so context. That depends so much on the person you're speaking yeah. with. And I'm leaning towards the positive mm-hmm. side. And mm-hmm. I'm aware that that's heavily influenced by my own personal experience. And just the fact that what I learned about neurodivergencies outside a doctor's office helped me so much and changed my life so much for the better. Like, it would be mm-hmm. really hypocritical of me to say it changed my life, but we should ban it from the internet and everybody has to go get a formal diagnosis because only doctors are able to tell.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was, yeah, like I said, just life-changing to find people sharing experiences that are similar to mine. And then there are, of course, a ton of reasons why someone wouldn't go for a formal diagnosis, and self-diagnosing is all that's left for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just friggin' expensive. That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also, depending on where you live, it might not be accessible at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, one thing I hear a lot is also being scared of going to that assessment and being like challenged in a disrespectful way.
Oh.
I think a very, very valid reason not wanting to go for it, because being undiagnosed autistic is already, autistic for example, is already, well, you already lived a life of rejection and being misunderstood mm-hmm. and then going somewhere where they judge your personality, everything you are, and right. tell you, no, you're, I don't know, you're not that, or you're faking it, or...
Right.
Yeah, so there's a fear.
Right. Okay, and I didn't think about that, though. Like, going to test, like an official test to get an official diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
The person conducting the test might not be good. Didn't cross my mind. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm sure that happens. Like, I mean, I've heard some horror stories, not about mental health, but like physical stuff, like doctors not believing their patients and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, only like 2 weeks ago, I went to see my psychiatrist here in Austria. And mm-hmm. it's only the second time I went to see him. But I mm-hmm. know him from like my previous work in the social care provider I worked at. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I know him. I trust him. I know he's good. But nothing more humbling than explaining your story and the way you experience the world to a person that is so willing to help, so willing to listen, and still doesn't get it.
Oh.
You know, he wasn't even mean or disrespectful.
Like he just couldn't comprehend?
Yeah, like it was just not helpful.
Really? So he just can't understand, like, are you telling him about your synesthesia stuff? Is that what it was?
Synesthesia is the part that I think he can grasp the most.
Okay. Okay.
But when I was describing my sleep, I mm-hmm. told him, when I sleep, I see not only one dream, but I see like six dreams at the same time, and they won't stop. And it's not like I'm not worried. Like, it's not anxiety. It's not like
mm-hmm.
my mind doesn't shut up because I'm so anxious. It must be some neurological. My brain doesn't pause at night. It doesn't have time to recover because like dreams are so hectic and there are so many dreams.
Six at a time? That's wild.
Yeah, I think he didn't really, even though he tried, didn't really understand how serious it is and how it affects my mental health so severely.
Right.
So of course the advice he gave me was also not very helpful.
Oh no.
Yeah, no, it's fine for me because I have my own professional background. It's like it's totally fine. Yeah, I just wanted to include that story and making the point of it can be actually part of the problem going to a doctor and not being believed, not being supported, being questioned in a way that is really hurtful. You know, they're in a position of power, and if they don't believe you, and the same for a diagnostic center or assessment teams, if they, I don't know, if they're not really hearing you out, it might be more of a negative experience than a positive one. Might not be the beginning of a new chapter, but more of another rejection.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, synesthesia itself is self-diagnosis. There really isn't a test except for a brain scan and a very specific one. So, I mean, we can't say like, oh, self-diagnosis is bad because we're doing it for our synesthesia. But yeah, it didn't cross my mind that I forgot that the person who's doing the test for us might not be very nice either. So that makes sense why people wouldn't want to go. I mean, I'm thinking like I'm scared to go get, not scared, but like I'm a little bit resistant to get one. I would love to get a brain scan just to see how it goes, but what if it shows up nothing? And I'm like, so what have I been seeing this whole time? So that's a bit of a fear as well. Like you have already like identified to this, and then when you get a test, why have they take it away? And then you're like, oh, so have I just been wasting my time, or you're just taking away a part of me now?
Yeah. There are a couple tests, I guess, to diagnose synesthesia. But you're right. Most of what we do and the people like in our Instagram community, I think they're just also self-identified, and that's completely valid. And it's just what it is. But you're right. I mean, if you would go get a brain scan and they would tell you you do not have synesthesia, would it really change your experience? Like then it's something else. But you haven't faked it. You didn't come up with it. You didn't wake up thinking, oh, this sounds like a fancy trade. Let's see how I can fake it. It is your experience. And I think that's a bit my approach in coaching and the work with my clients, that if you identify something, it might be helpful to use that set of criteria that we have for ADHD, autism, misophonia, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, if you don't have a formal diagnosis, I personally, for the work I do, don't care, because yeah, I want to work with you on your emotional experience. I want to work mm-hmm. with you on your well-being. I want to understand mm-hmm. it with you. What it is doesn't really matter. I'm not mm-hmm. doing diagnostics anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think self-identification, or whatever you want to call it,
is valid.
It's very valid.
Yeah. On the other hand, some people go for it. They reach out to them a bit too much. But on the flip side, like, it's good to have these labels, you like, for oneself. Mm. Like, instead of me, like, before, I'm always thinking, like, is there something wrong with me? Like, why am I like this? And I would think it's my personality that's like that. And then I'm like, but why is my personality like that? My mom is not like this. My dad is not like this. But why am I like this? And I thought I would be better. And then having that label just clears it up for me. Like, I can have more grace for myself to be like, mm-hmm. okay, so I mean, I still have a problem, but it's not my personality problem anymore. It's not who I am as a person. It's just my brain is different, and that's okay. Like, if it's just my brain is different, then I can hack it. I can find a way around it. I can figure ways to manage it. So having that label helps in a way. Yeah.
I know what you mean. I think some people would disagree with, like, making a distinction between this is my personality and this is my brain, because it's like, you know,
it's one
kind of one thing.
Yeah. But I don't know. To me, it's kind of split, at least for me, because, like,
mm-hmm.
the disconnect is like, I want to do certain things, but I can't because my brain is different. Or like, why is it easier for other people and not for me? It's because, well, my brain is different. So if my brain mm-hmm. was the same as them, I would have been fine, because my personality is not the problem here. It's like, I want to do it. It's just my brain is not allowing me to do it. So mm-hmm. that's the distinction there. So it's not me, it's my brain. Like, the chemicals in there are off.
Yeah, I completely understand what you mean. I know what you mean, totally. Autistic people, they like to say they're autistic, and like that being their personality, because it's just a core of who they are. For ADHD, mm-hmm. it might be a bit different, because some of those ADHD traits, like you just said, are not really describing your personality and the core of who you are. Like, if I have
mm-hmm.
low executive function,
mm-hmm.
then that's, I would agree, that's like a brain and like a hormone deficit that would make you not being able, what your personality, for example, like doing that creative project, doing whatever,
mm-hmm.
would want to do. And then because of that trait, because of that part of the condition, you're not able to do it. And that's, I think, where the distinction between personality and brain makes a lot mm-hmm. more sense from my perspective. So mm-hmm. I completely get it. Can I just add one more thing for the self-diagnosis? And I know we spoke about it on another episode ages and ages mm-hmm. ago. Getting a formal diagnosis is not often scary, not affordable, and not accessible. Also, getting a diagnosis, and that's actually the thing that would hold me back the most, is that mm-hmm. it will come with potential problems. Like, you might not be able to get a mortgage, you might not be able to adopt children, you might not be able to be a foster parent.
Oh.
You might, what else?
Really? Like, that can happen? Like, it will affect...
depending on where you live.
Right. Yeah. Well, I have no idea if Japan or Singapore is like this, actually. Yeah. Wow. But I don't think so. I don't think it affects. Because a lot of kids in my mom's childcare center, they get diagnosis since they were a kid, like ADHD or ADD or autism. Mm-hmm. So there's been a shift. It could be to do with social media. I don't know, but yeah.
So that's in Singapore.
Yeah. Mm. I digressed from the actual topic, sorry.
No, topic. You didn't. No, it does make sense. And it mm-hmm. is just the other pole of what I said, that getting a diagnosis might hold you back from doing things that you really want to do. But mm-hmm. getting a formal diagnosis also allows you access to the right treatment, the right
yep.
support.
Mm-hmm. And I think benefits as well, some benefits in Singapore, not benefits, like welfare yeah. stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it. Yeah, there's a huge void for a lot of people after getting a formal diagnosis where they're just like, here is your diagnostic report, 4 pages mm-hmm. about yourself. mm-hmm. Have a nice life. And there's no support offered at all. But I think especially for kids, often a diagnosis does make sense because the parents might be mm-hmm. new to the topic. The parents might realize it runs in their family. They know how to support their kid better, way better actually. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. yeah, just give them the right support. And then of course, a diagnosis is absolutely valuable. For me as an adult already, don't have to go through more education, like no kindergarten and stuff. Getting a diagnosis now, I would be like, oh, is it really worth it? Because what do I get from it? It won't help mm-hmm. me finish my studies because I already finished them, but it might hold me back from adoption or getting a mortgage or life insurance or whatever. So it's a different kind of...
Life insurance, yeah. Right, right.
Different kind of assessment you do for yourself as an adult versus your child that you're trying to desperately support in the best way. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess if it helps you, like, manage yourself better, then, like, self-diagnosis, that's, like, the positive of the self-diagnosis. It just helps you improve your own mental health. But I think the dangerous part is when you start spreading misinformation.
That's a very, very good transition.
That's the bad part. Like, right. just do it for yourself. That's fine. But, yeah, like don't tell other people what they are. Let them go figure it out for themselves. I mean, you can say, like, this is my experience. This is me. But then the rest, like, the mm-hmm. other person has to go figure it out themselves. Like, this is just me. Like, whenever I share, like, synesthesia stuff, I'm just like, this is me. Just me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's actually the perfect transition from just the matter of self-diagnosis to what happens on social media. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, we will never find a full conclusion for this massive, big, fast-paced topic. And I also want to say a bit of a disclaimer. What we say today is our opinion mid-October 2023. I feel like things can change.
It will change. So quickly.
Yeah, like yeah. there can be a completely different piece of context in half a year or whenever. And we will mm-hmm. look back on this episode and be like, oh, shit.
We're so ignorant. That's the other thing about the internet. Everyone is so brutal on the internet now. It's like, come on, have some grace for people.
Yeah.
That's true. It's like, Jesus, people, calm down. Unless it's really bad, then okay, yeah, I get it. But like,
yeah,
just every little thing can get you canceled now.
Mental health mm-hmm. content on Instagram and TikTok mm-hmm. is problematic.
I agree.
Question mark.
It's questionable. Very, very questionable. Actually, it makes me, like, some of the stuff that I watch, it makes me kind of like reject it. Kind of like, yeah. How do I say it? Like, for example, okay, I'm self-diagnosed ADHD because it's hard for me to get a diagnosis in Japan or in Singapore. The way they do it, it's just I'm not in Singapore. I won't be there enough and all that. But I feel like I don't want to accept that I have ADHD because of all these like cringy reels that I see online. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to be a part of this. It makes me be like, I don't want to join this quote-unquote trend or whatever, even though I do have it, which is a really bad thing. Can you imagine someone who actually has it and be like, no, I don't, because it's so cringy to have this mental illness. Like, that's really bad. yeah, so that's for me. But of course, I'm not rejecting it. Like, I know I have, I don't think I have it very, very badly compared to a lot of other people. I can still some kind of push through it. Like, my ADHD, I struggle, yes, but it's not as bad. It's not completely crippling for me. So I think I'm not that bad, I think.
I think good and bad ADHD is probably, like, not the right terminology. Whatever. I mean, know what you mean.
Like, the spectrum thing, like, I'm not that serious where it's completely
how
crippling.
How much it impacts your day-to-day, maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the goals you have for yourself. Yeah, I completely get that. I reject a lot of the stuff that is online. And I also love a lot of the stuff that is online.
Yeah, some of them are really funny, though. I'm like...
funny as well, but also I follow the accounts that I think they actually have evidence-based, well-researched information. And those that are really, like, shaping our idea of neurodivergency and the neurodiversity movement. Those I love following. I learn so much, and I still
can you share them with me? I just see a lot of those cringy ones.
Yeah,
and I'm like, ugh.
I think you're just more in the ADHD bubble, and I'm more in the autism bubble.
I think so. What yeah,
it comes down.
I see so much like ADHD stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's really the worst content, like those dancing reels of someone. Those are five signs.
Eight
you
signs
might
you have ADHD.
And they're so general. And that's actually one of the messages we got on Instagram. Let me just read it out. I did a poll on Instagram today to ask about your thoughts about self-diagnosis trend, let's say, on Instagram. And someone replied, most content creators simplify things to reach more people who suddenly can identify with blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't agree more. They're reels that are just, like you said earlier, they're short, 8 seconds. They do really well with the algorithm. They have very general information, way too general. So everybody kind of identifies with it. So it really gets boosted and they get more exposure.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen a lot of those like stimming videos. ADHD people has like the T-Rex arm or like they like all the typical stimming stuff that ADHD people do. And I'm like, I don't think just ADHD people do that. So that's really dangerous too. Can you imagine this like completely normal teenager or child is just like, was just maybe a little bit nervous before a presentation in school and is doing that similar stimming thing and now thinks that they have ADHD or autism or something. And I was like, that's really dangerous. Like, it could just be a very simple thing. Like, when I'm nervous before, like, a presentation, like, I could be, like, shaking my legs or, like, doing something, like, that's considered stimming on these videos. And then if I didn't know better or if I didn't know how to, like, filter this information by myself, I would just, if I was a kid and I can't filter all these stuff by myself, and I would be like, oh, I have ADHD. And I'm going to go to my mom and be like, if I have ADHD. And then my mom would be like, what? So it's so, like, you can see how it would trickle down to or ripple out into, like, more problematic situations.
The thing is just, for me, I feel like someone thinking, like, they're doing some sort of stimming because they're anxious, maybe they had too much coffee and they can't really understand what their bouncy behavior is about, and then they see a reel and they're like, oh, I might have ADHD, but then they don't encounter any other symptoms and the thought goes away, maybe. So there's definitely a lot of negatives, especially on people that don't have the resources to educate themselves in any other way, or they're too young, whatever it might be. I just feel like there are a couple wins we have with that neurodiversity movement online that are, they outweigh the negatives, but that's just from my perspective. See how nervous I get. No, but I think...
Don't cancel us.
Okay, let me just name three wins that we got from the whole movement. I know they're negatives 100% and I'm not glorifying anything. But people who struggled their whole lives were misdiagnosed, like I was, multiple times, finally got an answer, and now live much better lives and that's just a fact without a doctor being like telling me what it is. Just hearing other people's experiences helped me so much understand and find a language for my own that it already helped me so much.
Yeah.
Do we need like huge labels for it? Probably not, but also that's just how language works and how we get to the right information. It's by using categories and headlines right. for different things, and then that's how we can connect dots, right?
Mm-hmm.
It saves people's lives.
Agree. I mean, that's how I found out I had ADHD too, is through an article. Well, it wasn't from Instagram. It was an article that I read online and just talking about how ADHD in girls are different. And I didn't know at that time that there's a difference. And then I was reading it and there's a checklist and I was like, oh, ha, 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 that's me. And I just thought it was a joke and I sent it to my mom. I was like, ha, ha, I think I have ADHD. And my mom was like, yeah, I know that. And I was like, what? Mom.
Wow. Absolutely. I agree so much. Besides the fact that it actually saves literal lives by providing information and understanding yourself, which is already a huge win. We know suicide rates in autistic people are higher. So if we can somehow get to a smaller number, amazing. The other win, 100%, like you said, it put women more in the center of the medical discussion.
Oh, is it? In what way?
Like you just said, ADHD in women.
Oh, I see, I see.
Nobody ever spoke about that. Okay. Autism in women, autism in girls. And not just that, like for any other, like women are just moving more in the center of mental health. How do mental health conditions present in men and women and non-binary folks? And it's not just knowing that it presents differently. Like that's extremely, extremely important, knowing that different conditions present differently in different genders. And it doesn't even have to be like your biological gender, but you were raised as a female child. Regardless of your biology, you might be intersex or trans, but you were brought up as a child. So people had expectations, societal norms for a female child. And that also shaped the way you coped with your own symptoms, like being hyperactive or whatever.
So we
kind of fulfill the expectations people have for us based on the gender they think we have. Kind of a long sentence.
No, but it's important.
And the last win, and I think that's also a huge one that I see in that movement, is this movement will have an impact on our diagnostic criteria.
Oh, okay. Like from a doctor's point of view.
Yeah, so right now what we use to diagnose someone is, depending on where you live, the DSM or the ICD. Those are just diagnostic manuals for conditions and mental health conditions. And I can already see that the way we speak about it differently now, like it's so, it used to be so deficit oriented. Like even in my job here in Austria, we were all super qualified, but we had no idea about neurodiversity. So when you see someone, you still, with the lack of knowledge you have, you would try to figure your client out by looking at them. What can they not do, maybe? Like an autistic client, you would be like, they're very classical, but they understand humor. They make jokes. They make eye contact. It's all of that bullshit that you can see from the outside, and then you base your diagnosis or your judgment, valid or not, you base it on what you perceive from the outside as a clinician.
I see.
Whereas now what happens is a lot more looking and trusting the person's inner experience. What does it feel like? What is that thunderstorm, that tornado that you have 24/7 inside of you? What does it feel like? When is it worse? When is it better? how were you able to mask so well? Mm-hmm. And yeah, like trusting the inner experience rather than looking at them from the outside and detecting deficits. It's like, mm-hmm. how do you feel on the inside? And those should be our criteria, not mm-hmm. what I can see. What you tell me. What you tell me is the criteria. You are the expert for your body.
That's true. Yeah. I think that's a lot better. Like the angle of the approach, it's much more full. Like I think if there's mm-hmm. something wrong with you physically, it's you can see it from the outside more easily. Like there will be physical mm-hmm. symptoms that something isn't quite right. But like mental one, it could, yeah, it's very easily hidden. Like you can't see it. Like you just, there are a lot of things that you can't see that goes on in the person's mind. And yeah, opening up that conversation, allowing that person to talk about it before you make a diagnosis is great. It's really, really good.
Yeah, making it the core of your diagnosis. That's what it should be.
Yeah, I mean, of course, there are some like behavioral stuff. Like you can see some on the outside, I'm sure, because like how you think kind of affects the way you act and stuff, but it shouldn't solely be based on that.
Also, those have to be just looked at a bit more critically, I guess. Like a tantrum, mm-hmm. for example, saying meltdowns mm-hmm. or whatever is a symptom of autism or ADHD. Mm-hmm. Sure, we see it a lot. It happens a lot. It's a really bad experience. Mm-hmm. But it's not the symptom. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not
right.
that you have meltdowns. You have a certain experience which leads to a meltdown. It's a reaction to your symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's a reaction to your right. experience. So, of course, that's what we see from the outside. A lot of kids have massive meltdowns and shutdowns, but they're the result of, you know, something else, sensory sensitivities, being misunderstood, being rejected, being dragged to stuff that they can't do, being not able to communicate your needs and not being accommodated properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the result is a meltdown.
Right.
And that's what we see. But there's a lot yeah. before that we can't see.
Absolutely agree. Especially when it comes to mental health. You know, you kind of like need to dig a little deeper. It's not on the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I feel like those are all huge wins. And the question is just, for me at least, to what price? To what price do we have those wins? Because right. it comes with a price. Oh, man.
Definitely. And I think another win is probably like because of the amount of awareness that is being built around like ADHD and autism and stuff. There are more research about it. Like people are putting more money to like do more research about it and find out more about it.
Yeah.
Which is also another plus. And then the more information that we get, the more we know, it's good. Like it helps. It trickles down to a lot of stuff like your diagnostics criterias.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it trickles down to all of that. Things can change. Yeah. Because of this overwhelming like push of interest in this now. Like,
that's true. What we need in the end is international, up-to-date, evidence-based knowledge that's accessible mm-hmm. and that's free.
Right.
And a world where when you get a diagnosis, you actually get support rather than a stigma and discrimination and social hardships. So yeah, right. that's the goal. That's where we want to be. As long as we don't have that, as long as we don't have that kind of support, I completely understand that people are more drawn towards online resources than going to their GP. Because I know mm-hmm. if I would go to my GP in Germany, let's hope they're not listening. I mean, I went there my whole life and I had no fucking idea what I was talking about, you know?
Right, right.
I remember so many appointments where I explained, gosh, so many different things. The amount of allergy tests I had to go through for my stomach issues is like insane. Why did I cost the health system so much?
Mine was always like, it just chalked up to some bacteria thing for my stomach.
Yeah. And was that the case? Probably not.
But it could also be because, like, I'm on the medication, I'm actually resting. So that helps with, like, recovering from overstimulation. Right. Yeah.
Right.
I just thought I'm weak. My body's weak. Well, it is. I mean, it's sensitive. It's not really weak.
Yeah, sensitive and weak is not the same thing, even though we were made to believe that.
Oh, and another point about, like, social media, this movement and people being more aware is that, when I was in Australia and I was in a club and I had, like, AirPods in my ears the whole time, nobody asked anything. Like, nobody questioned me or, like, why are you wearing AirPods? Or, like, nobody said anything. And when I was in the bathroom and this girl was like, oh, are you wearing AirPods? And I was like, yeah. And then she was like, are you autistic? And I was like, no, but I have synesthesia. And that bothers me. And she was like, oh, cool, yeah. Because my, and like, she just knows. And like, people are just aware. And I was like, whoa, that's very refreshing. And then she started sharing about like her boyfriend being autistic and she has ADHD. And I was like, oh, God, like me too. And like, that was nice, like a very nice interaction. I mean, of course, like, you know, we were both a little tipsy and all that, but it was a really nice, like, interaction for her to be like...
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that is kind of magical to see that online stuff then happening in real life and people are, like, nice. Let's talk about one other thing that pisses me off online so much. When I hear people say ADHD... is an excuse. Have you seen a lot of that?
So much.
Who is it an excuse for? I almost feel like those that say ADHD is an excuse are jealous that they don't have an excuse. Okay, I haven't thought much about that statement, but
that's funny.
Why would someone claim a disability or neurodivergency as an excuse? I just don't understand it.
I mean, I feel that too sometimes, like when I explain to people why sometimes I can't do certain things, or if I do things this way and I'm like, it's because I have ADHD, but then like I feel a bit hard to tell them that because I don't want them to think that it's just an excuse. So I'm like, oh, I'm not going to tell you it's because of my ADHD. I'll find some like random like excuse that doesn't even make sense. And I'm trying to not make it a habit. But I catch myself doing that sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I get it. Oh, I'm trying to make sense here because I'm, of course, part of me does know why people say it's an excuse. But just don't take ADHD being an excuse for a small percentage. Don't take away the spotlight from those that want to talk about their actual literal disability. Like, they have something to say. They are about to change our way of thinking. They're trying to influence our education system. Don't take away their spotlight and microphone to say, oh, but you know, there are some people that use it as an excuse because they're actually just lazy. You know, just...
Well, then those people are assholes. But like, the large majority of us are not assholes. We actually have this. It's like a few black sheeps, like making it worse for everybody else who actually have ADHD.
We're so many people and we have such different intentions. But at the core of the neurodiversity movement, what we want is understanding. We want inclusion. We want, what else do we want? We support, want good funded community. Research. Yeah. Community, exactly.
Yeah. And also it just helps other people understand themselves. It's like, oh, okay, that's why. Or like, I'm not the only one. You feel less lonely.
Takes time.
Yeah. I mean, your account helped me a lot with all that vocabulary. I remember I was reading this vocabulary post about synesthesia.
Oh, that's nice.
And I was like, oh, that's perfect. Now I can like name them and like say it out loud instead of like being unable to describe what it is.
Yeah.
So it was good to get that vocabulary And I'd be like, oh, okay, now I can share. Yeah, it's so useful. I love your account. Yeah, that's where I was like, hey, sliding into your DMs. Do you want to be friends?
I sure do. One thing I also took away from the community meetup we had a couple weeks ago was that mm-hmm. people struggle communicating their synesthesia, especially to someone else. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm currently working on a concept for like topic-focused group sessions where we tackle one topic at a time, like that, for example, how do I talk to people, how do I speak about my neurodivergency mm-hmm. or my synesthesia mm-hmm. confidently, and how do I gain that level of confidence in the first place, like if I think it's mm-hmm. it's a strange thing and I don't really believe myself and I don't have enough data to back it up with mm-hmm. in my brain anyway, how do I communicate it? But yeah, I think that's a very important topic. Yeah, what advice do we want to give out before we end this episode?
Go do your research. Don't take stuff on the face. Just don't take it straight.
Especially when someone's dancing while naming symptoms. Please double check that information.
Yes. Even if they sound super sure of themselves, still check.
Everybody has a different algorithm and a different experience and also mm-hmm. a different disposition to begin with. Mental health is an amazing, important topic. I'm so glad we shed more light on it. Is social media the right place to do it? Who knows? For me, it was fantastic. It's also problematic, but so was my doctor's appointment when I was a teenager. So, you know.
Basically,
there's, you know, problematic stuff.
Exercise critical thinking. So even in a silly dance video, maybe there's one of their advice might work. I mean, who knows?
No.
But, you know, always exercise caution.
Good. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk Synesthesia. There'll be a new episode of Series 1 every Tuesday. If you enjoyed listening, you can like, follow, and share. Details about the podcast and how to connect with today's speakers can be found in the show notes. The executive producer was Micah Pricing, with music by Karen Anderson, and the podcast was supported by a couple more neurodivergent people in the background. See you next week.